Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts.
All right. Hello, everyone. Today, we are here on the next episode of Ivy Podcast with our next guest, Eugenia DiMarco. Eugenia, she's our venture partner at Big Sky Capital and also the CEO of CISO Powerhouse. Eugenia, thank you so much for taking your time to be here on our episode. It's a big pleasure and a big honor to have you on our podcast. Maybe please start off from, you know, talking about yourself, talking about your background, and, you know, just share a little bit about your story.
Yeah, of course. First of all, Diaz, thank you very much. It's always an honor for me as well to be sharing the screen with you and sharing my personal experience with you all. Well, I am originally from Argentina, from a family of four, and my grandmother, who is 97 and is still super, super mega strong. Today, I live in Fort Lauderdale with my partner. And no matter where I've been all across the globe, my family has always been my grounding force. This is kind of my personal background. And from my professional background, so I started my career as a lawyer in Argentina. And I started there supporting tech giants like Accenture and Globant. And this is quite interesting because there I learned how big organizations manage risk at a scale where processes and compliance are the rule every day. But then I moved to Italy and I started working at a boutique law firm advising startups. And the energy was completely different. It was messy, it was fast, it was full of vision and passion. And that's when I saw it. Founders don't just need legal answers, but they need a legal strategy that grows with them. Later on, I moved to the US and I did a postgraduate LLM course, a blend with an MBA course focused on entrepreneurship. And then I was super lucky because I keep on working for Berkeley Law in partnership with the SkyDeck, that is the UC Berkeley accelerator. And that experience for me was transformative because I was living in the intersection of law, business, innovation, venture capital, and surrounded by thousands of founders, literally building the future. And I define myself as a nerd. I never stop studying. After that, I was awarded by the MIT as a digital transformation leader. And after that, I did a negotiation postgraduate course on the London School of Economics, where I was extremely lucky because they named me Emerging Woman Leader, and this was in 2022. And yeah, to summarize this question and to answer you quite straightforward, well, as you can see, I live across countries. I was lucky to be immersed in many, many different cultures. And this showed me that startups that scale globally are the ones who, among other factors, treat legal as a strategy. And those ones are the ones who, at the end of the world, are the ones who succeed. But then I also realized that the truth for many founders is that it's not easy to find the legal tools to guide them in order to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I am now where I am as a CEO and founder of CISO Powerhouse, where my mission is exactly that, is basically trying to eliminate that gap.
Wow, what a background, Eugenia. Thank you for sharing your incredible experience. I know how hard it is, right, to live in three different, not only in three different countries, but also in three different continents, which is Latin America and then Europe and then moving to the US. I know how tough this is because there are a lot of, differentiating, things in terms of work, in terms of building businesses, in terms of, life in general. Tell me more about your motivation. So you said you began your career in Argentina, and then you moved to Italy, and then US. And tell me about what motivated you to really start this path.
Well, first, this gap that I start seeing across the globe, like founders were in need of legal tools, and they saw lawyers as firefighters, not as fire preventers. And then I was like, yeah, I think that I need to start building something where founders start seeing me as a partner, as a strategic partner, as a fire preventer, not as a firefighter. And then also, one of the main motivations that I had was my brother. So my brother is also an entrepreneur. He was invested by Uber, and he had this blocker. My brother is from Argentina, expanding into the US, and this journey for him was extremely challenged, super difficult. And back at that time, I wasn't able to help him because I was studying. But then after I started hearing his stories and his experiences with other professionals, I was like, yeah, I need to do something in this regard. So that is something else that really encouraged me to build what I am building right now.
Yeah, because you see, a lot of the times founders, when they think about starting a company, when they think about, launching one of their new companies, they always, think that it's going to be easy. Okay, I see the pain, but in reality, it's going to, take them like forever, right? So maybe tell me more about the main challenges that you faced on your way when it comes to launching CISO Powerhouse.
Well, many challenges. First, because I always work for others. So building my own company, being an entrepreneur myself, was the biggest challenge because I was used to something else. I always work with founders, but I was never a founder. So I realized how difficult it is you need to have so many skills and to start learning so many things from the scratch. That's something incredible. I'm building now, and I look back in 2023 when CISO started, and it was like, dude, I can't believe how many things I learned. I am not only a lawyer, but I am also the salesperson. Back at that time, I was also the recruiter of my company. I was like everything. I was doing marketing, things that I've never done before, and I learned them. And this challenge was something incredible for me, but I was lucky enough because I realized that one of the most important things back at the time was to ask for help, because being able to do everything, it's impossible. I'm expert in very specific fields. Then the rest is something that I will learn. I need to embrace those other fields, but I'm not an expert, so I need help. And that is something that really helped me surpass all these different kind of challenges.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, because you see, I have a lot of relatives, I have a lot of friends who are amazing doctors, who are amazing fitness trainers, who are amazing, actors, stuff like that. But when it comes to launching your own company, it's a completely different, you know, skill set, and also a completely different mindset that people need to acquire. So it's not only about knowing your job well, it's also knowing about how to communicate properly, how to structure your how to structure your day properly. It's also about, you know, knowing all the legal and financial part of the business. So I know how tough it is because I've been there. You know, I've launched a couple of companies. Right now I'm in Bixa Capital, and I know how tough and you know, how challenging this path can get. So yeah, I can totally relate with you on this regard. In terms of legal, you know, legal stuff that you do at CSU Powerhouse, maybe share a little bit of, you know, a little bit of advice to the founders who are launching their own startups, but they miss the essential parts of the legal documents. Maybe tell us more about the legal documents that founders should, you know, should have whenever they launch their startups. Because as a startup founder myself a couple of years ago, I did not, you know, include, and I did not even know about a lot of things that I know nowadays. Maybe there are, you know, not maybe, but of course there are a lot of startup founders who are launching their startups and they think it's going to take them like a year to become a unicorn without even, you know, structuring their data rooms, without even structuring their financial, legal, you know, documents. So in your personal opinion, what are the main, you know, things that they should include in their data room, as well as, you know, legal, legal stuff?
Yeah, of course. And then go a step like before. Let me tell you a little bit in a very short sentence what CISO is doing. So founders understand why I'm talking now about key legal essentials. So basically, at CISU, we help founders build and keep their legal house in order so they can scale, they can fundraise, and they can expand globally without legal blockers. Within that ecosystem, within that services we do for founders, is handling the key legal essentials. What are these key legal essentials? I like to divide them in three different stages, right? And these stages are pre-incorporation, incorporation, and post-incorporation essentials, right? Depending on the stage you are and the needs that you have, what are the key elements that you are going to prioritize in your growth? When I'm talking about pre-incorporation, I'm talking about basically the alignment among founders, clear agreements on equity, clear agreements on decision making. What happens if someone leaves, for example? These kind of things will avoid early conflicts. Imagine, Diaz, that 64% of the startups disappear because of founder problems. So imagine how important and essential is this pre-incorporation step when it's time for founders to start building their companies on solid grounds. Then we have the incorporation section. And in here we have the foundation. For US fundraising, for example, this usually means a Delaware C Corp, where you will need bylaws, where you will need a clean cap table, governance, investor trust. Think of it as a setting of, or like setting concrete before you build the house. And then we have the post-incorporation kind of documents. And this is where most founders have challenges. Because when I'm talking about post-incorporation documents, I'm talking about building a solid IP strategy, a solid talent and labor strategy, a trademark that will really show your investor that you are protecting your brand. a scalable client and vendor agreements. And of course, especially right now, strong privacy and ESG practices. Investors and clients, and this is something that I always tell my clients, expect all of this from day one.
Yes, absolutely. At the very beginning, you said 64% of founders, they have conflicts of interest because of not structuring their legal documents properly at the beginning. So this is a very bad statistic, to be honest, because I truly believe that this podcast will help some of the founders who are listening to us to better prepare their legal documents so that they don't have any, conflicts of interest or any conflicts. Obviously, myself and Jan, we make a lot of posts on social media, a lot of, helpful advice on how to structure a data room, on how to, resolve the founder's conflict about, what to do when VC rejects you and stuff like that. And I'm sure that by listening to our podcast, by listening to your advice, and also by reading all the information that we share on social media, founders will get much more, they'll get much more knowledge in terms of, structuring their data room, in terms of structuring their pitch decks, in terms of structuring their legal documents. So thank you.
Yeah, and that is also, sorry to interrupt you, but I think that is super key what you're saying, right? Giving the founders the right tools. That is not very easy to find, especially right now that you find such a diverse ecosystem of tools in internet, or I don't know, now that we have ChatGPT and AI and everything. And I think that what makes us different as professionals, as venture capital professionals, as legal professionals, is the way we work. Because nowadays, the founders, they just don't see us as, okay, this is the investors, okay, this is the lawyer, but they see us as strategic partners at the table, almost like co-founders for their legal and their growth strategy. And that is something quite unique that we have as a differentiator.
Yes, absolutely. Because recently I've been talking to some founders and they told me one interesting thing. They said, yes, if I have ChatGPT, if I have AI tools, why would I need you guys, right? And, that made me realize that, AI is growing, obviously, but at the same time, I truly believe that, having that human connection and knowing the things that, obviously AI knows a lot of things. It knows everything, especially ChatGPT, but in terms of, making the warm intros, in terms of giving the real, and the real feedback from the life story is much more valuable than just getting an answer from ChatGPT. And mm-hmm. I truly believe that, truly believing and having good relationships with VCs, with lawyers, with the professionals, it's very crucial for every startup founder, because you cannot get, the real things from ChatGPT as you can get from the real, professionals like yourself.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. So tell us more a little bit about, the common mistakes. At the very beginning, you said a lot of things about, what founders should include. But when you work with startup founders and when you look at their data rooms, what are the, maybe 3 to 5 key things that they skip in their data rooms that usually lawyers tag them as red flags?
Well, a very common mistake when I see data rooms is that it's extremely messy. Imagine that when we incorporate a Delaware C Corp, we try to allocate to the founders the 80% of the shares, then the rest will go to the stock option plan and some other stock will be allocated to investors, for example. But many times when these founders arrive to me, I see, I don't know, 10 people in the cap table, and they started the company 3 months ago. And I am like, why? I mean, why is this happening? Why is this so messy? And very tied to the cap table is the governance strategy that they have alongside the cap table. Because, for example, they sometimes I see, okay, well, I have allocated some equity to my employees, but then when I go to the to see that in practice on paper, I don't see that. So they start promising equity and adding them to the cap table, but without really having a governance and a contract strategy behind to back that decisions, for example. Something else that I always see as well is that there are key decisions, allocating equity is one of them, that needs to be approved by the board. And I don't see that either. They just do it without the knowledge of how to do that properly, legally speaking, from the strategy perspective, way of speaking, from the compliance perspective as well. So, and I don't blame them. I think that this is part of the fact that they just don't have the tools to do that in the right order, right? I come from Latin America. Latin America is growing. Wow. I mean, something incredible. The professionals that I am seeing in Latin American countries, the innovation mindset that I'm seeing, the passion that I see every day is incredible. But sometimes they don't have these kind of tools that they will teach them how to properly fundraise in the US, for example. So when they come here and they say, well, yeah, I'm prepared. Yes, of course. Well, I already fundraise in Latin America, but it's not the same. And they tend to commit this kind of mistakes because of the lack of tools.
Yes, absolutely. You see, because of the difference in the mindset and the lack of tools, a lot of the founders, including myself, like 4 or 5 years ago, made a lot of mistakes on the data room, made a lot of mistakes on these, you know, crucial documents, as we mentioned before. So perhaps so you see these kind of founders on a very, you know, on a daily basis. And what advice would you give to founders when they are negotiating their saves, convertible notes, or cross-border funding? Because we see, you know, on our experience, we see a lot of startup founders making, you know, some very obvious mistakes, and we really want to help them out. But we cannot obviously help everyone. So when you see in your personal experience and in your view, what advice would you give to these kind of founders?
First of all, read the documents before signing them. I know that it's very, it's a temptation to see the money in front of you, and that you want to close things fast because you want to receive that money to keep on scaling and keep on growing, right? But I think that it's very strategic, especially in early stages, to really read the documents that maybe the investors or the angel investors are giving to you. Because I've seen SAFE that kind of look like the YC Combinator template, but they are not. They have very aggressive terms, but because the founders think that is a regular Y Combinator template, they just sign it. And then challenges come. For example, they need to ask for permission when it's time to take some kind of decisions at earlier stage. I saw founders that because of these kind of situations, they just don't have the right path to keep on innovating, because some investor can become a blocker if these kind of clauses are not well written, or they just don't know, or the founder don't know what are the implications of signing this kind or getting into this kind of terms and conditions.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You see, in terms of these founders, they always think, well, myself including, as I mentioned earlier, you know, that missing these kind of, you know, essential things is a big red flag, because I have a lot of founders who are coming up to me and saying, DS, can you, I'm going to, you know, share my data room with you. Could you please review it? Give me some feedback. And even though I really want to do it, even though I really want to help them out, I physically don't have enough time to help them out. And even when I find the time to actually sit and open their data rooms, I see so many things that you've mentioned just now, you know, all the red flags. And I was like sitting in a couple of times, oh my God, just, you know, sit there. I'm going to give you tools. I'm going to open the folder for you just for this time, just for once. And just, you know, just do it. Just fix those mistakes and then come back to me in a couple of weeks when you are totally ready in terms of your data room. And then I'll be able to give you new feedback, right? Sometimes we do help founders just for free, you know, because we see that we see the potential. We see that founders are, you know, are willing to take it to the next level. And that's when we really, you know, really, really want to help them out.
Yeah. And so from the investor side, legal is often the deal maker or the deal breaker. A startup, as you are mentioning, can have a great traction. But if the incorporation is messy, the IP isn't owned by the company, or the cap table is unclear, it might kill investor confidence. And that is something that, as founders, we cannot afford.
Absolutely, yeah. As also, as I mentioned earlier, we see a lot of messy data rooms. Obviously, we see it on the stage of pre-seed and seed mostly, but the startups from Series A, they're more mature. They know exactly what they're doing. They have a board of advisors, board of directors, and that actually gives more confidence for VCs and for investors. Because as VCs, we've reviewed those data rooms on a daily basis, like hundreds of data rooms per week. So we, you know, I definitely agree with you on all the legal side of the matter. So earlier on, we discussed the influence of AI in the legal sector. So you've been recognized, you know, by MIT for digital transformation. And please tell me about your, you know, how do you see it, and where do you see law and tech converging next?
Well, basically, digital transformation in legal services, that's incredible. So the future of law isn't 50 pages memos. The future of law, from my perspective, is automation, templates, strategy, because founders want speed and they want clarity. They just don't want legalese. And based on that, and that's what I've learned. I mean, legal has to move as the speed of startups, because if not, we are screwed, basically. And regarding AI specifically, I think that artificial intelligence is already reshaping contracts, risk analysis, and compliance. And that is incredible, because it is bringing speed, but also it is bringing new responsibilities around privacy and cross-border rules. And because of that, founders need to be ahead of regulators, not behind them. I heard the other day something like AI won't replace lawyers, but it will replace lawyers who don't adapt. Basically. So, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. We see that on a daily basis. And every morning when I, you know, when I open my Instagram or when I open the, you know, news section, I always see that AI is, you know, in a couple of weeks, it's going to replace, you know, the constructors, it's going to replace the lawyers, it's going to replace, you know, a lot of other professions. And, you know, I'm always doubting these kind of things, because obviously nowadays, especially in the 21st century, people who are not being able to adapt, those are the ones who are going to lose their jobs, and those are the ones who are not going to be able to, you know, thrive in this market.
Yeah. They will disappear, basically.
Absolutely. So, you know, in your personal opinion, how should not only lawyers, but let's say perhaps, you know, the professionals like startup founders or lawyers, including professors, you know, how do you think they should adapt their strategies, and how do you think they should adapt their, you know, thinking skills and operating skills in terms of, you know, in terms of this decade, how should they thrive? You know.
So yeah, how should they embrace these technologies? And I'm going to talk about lawyers. I mean myself, right? We learned old school. That's the key basic of law schools, basically, especially 12 years ago, 15 years ago when I studied. Oh, 12. So we were educated in a very narrow-minded way of practicing law. And the way we can change that, or the way I changed that mindset, was first asking for help when I don't know what to do in that regard. I'm not an engineer. I do know how to code, though, because I work with tech startups. But that is something I learned because I asked for help, because I was in need of understanding tech contracts. Mm-hmm. And without knowing the behind the scene of tech, I will be never able to help the founders to translate the technology into a contract, for example. Then, besides asking for help, is being open. I travel a lot. I've lived across continents, and that also helped me a lot. The fact of living in different cultures with different people helped me a lot. Also, something else that helped me 100% was the fact that I was able to build an interdisciplinary team. Okay. Because as I mentioned before, I don't know. I mean, I just know a few things and I know them very well. But I would not be able to know everything. So having the possibility of building an interdisciplinary team is key. In order to succeed. And it's key when it's time to help founders, because a holistic point of view is the most important thing when you're giving advice to others.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing that, Eugenia. You know, I have two last questions to finish off today's podcast, and these are my favorite questions to ask. So if you were in a position to just beginning your very first company, let's say Sisu Powerhouse or any other, you know, startup or a company, what would be, you know, the only advice you would give to yourself back then to actually make your company successful and to, you know, to get to a point where you are successful financially faster?
Focus. For me, is focus. One of my favorite books is The One Thing by Gary Keller, who literally talks about that. So I would recommend you guys to read The One Thing. That mainly is talking about doing one thing at a time with focus. And the thing that you're doing it, do it in the best way possible. So that is my advice. Just understand what is your mission, write your values, understand your values and how to show your values in the company that you're building. And when you understand those things, focus on how to build a company that will really change the world.
Well, you just answered my second question. Which is, what's your favorite book, you know, and what kind of book would you recommend to our listeners?
Okay, well, I already did that.
Thank you so much, Eugenia. This podcast was so helpful, not only for the listeners, but also for myself, because, you know, in our different episodes, I always tell to our, you know, guests, our podcast guests, that I learn a lot myself from the amazing guests we have on our podcast. And I'm sure that this podcast was also super, you know, productive and super helpful for all the listeners, for all the founders and the CEOs, I'm sure, in terms of not only in terms of the legal side, but also getting to know more perspective, you know, on the what's going on in the legal world right now.
So, 100%, yes. Thank you, Diaz, for this opportunity. I loved to share my experience as an entrepreneur, to share my experience as a lawyer. And as you mentioned, every podcast, every situation, every interaction is an opportunity to keep on learning. So thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Eugenia.